The grief-stunned family was next door in the living room, old grandmas, baby cousins. In the kitchen, finally, were the parents of the kids who'd gone through the Newton schools with Ben Rifkin. This was our crowd. We had known one another since our kids showed up for the first day of kindergarten 8 years earlier. We had stood together at 1,000 morning drop-offs and afternoon pickups, endless soccer games and school fundraisers, and one memorable production of 12 Angry Men. Still, a few close friendships aside, we did not know one another all that well. There was a camaraderie among us, certainly, but no real connection. Most of these acquaintanceships would not survive our kids' graduation from high school. But in those first days after Ben Rifkin's murder, we felt an illusion of closeness. It was as if we had all suddenly been revealed to one another. In the Rifkins' vast kitchen, Wolf cooktop, Sub-Zero fridge, granite counters, English white cabinets. The school parents huddled in clusters of three or four and made intimate confessions about insomnia, sadness, unshakable dread. They talked over and over about Columbine and 9/11, and how Ben's death made them cling to their own children while they could. The extravagant emotions of that evening were heightened by the warm light in the kitchen, cast by hanging fixtures with burnt orange globes. In that firelight, as I entered the room, the parents were indulging one another in the luxury of confessing secrets. At the kitchen island, one of the moms, Toby Landsman, was arranging hors d'oeuvres on a serving platter as I came into the room. A dish towel was slung over her shoulder. The sinews in her forearms stood out as she worked. Toby was my wife Lori's best friend, one of the few enduring connections we had made here. She saw me searching for my wife, and she pointed across the room. "She's mothering the mothers," Toby said. "I see that. Well, we can all use a little mothering at the moment." I grunted, gave her a puzzled look, and moved off. Toby was an incitement. My only defense against her was a tactical retreat. Lori stood with a small circle of moms. Her hair, which has always been thick and unruly, was swept up in a loose bun at the back of her head and held there by a big tortoiseshell hair clip. She rubbed a friend's upper arm in a consoling way. Her friend inclined toward Lori visibly, like a cat being stroked. When I reached her, Lori put her left arm around my waist. "Hi, sweetie. It's time to go." "Andy, you've been saying that since the second we got here." "Not true. I've been thinking it, not saying it." "Well, it's been written all over your face." She sighed. "I knew we should have come in separate cars.